Hello, welcome to episode 70 of the Extra Sequential podcast, focusing on the world of graphic novels, manga, and comics. My name is Mladen.
My name is Chris, and yes, we are counting down.
What?
To the Christmas.
To the Christmas. We're also counting down to our our final show of this year will be our Best of 2011 show, and I've got to say I'm kind of looking forward to this one. I've had fun picking through which books I think deserve my nomination. Have you had trouble trying to pick your selections yourself?
Well, I've got a random list in my head, but I just need to kind of put it down on paper. But it's been a pretty stellar year and a few surprises, but I guess we can say that every year.
Oh, for sure. And, I mean, as we draw closer to the end of the year, you kind of take stock of everything you've done in that year, and maybe that's what triggered this week's topic, which is looking
what we haven't done.
What we haven't done this year, correct. I guess our pile of shame of books, and to steal the term from the great TV show Good Game, and it's rather fitting. Every comic collector or anyone who reads books or whatever will probably have a bunch of books that they've bought and just for whatever reason never got around to reading, and we're kind of going to look into maybe why we never read these ones and what stopped us, and maybe just touch on collector culture in general through the show.
Yep. It sounds like a plan to me, my friend. Let's get into the news.
Yeah, let's do that. Big news this week, Chris.
Congratulations. No, what?
Prizes, yeah. Prize giveaway on the Extra Sequential Facebook.
Yes, congratulations to Matthew. So, yeah, I didn't even get what your clue was.
After I typed it, I'm like, that's way too cryptic.
We should point out that, we had a giveaway. We wanted to do another giveaway before Christmas.
Yep.
Basically an excuse to get rid of double ups or freebies that we occasionally get from time to time. So, so congratulations to Matthew. But, yeah, the hint was Red Sonja. So I stopped short of saying, you know, she wears a chainmail bikini and was played by Sylvester Stallone's ex-wife once.
See, no one got my bizarre cryptic clues, because I was probably thinking too laterally, because I mentioned something about
falling behind the Russian curse.
See, I was thinking of the Superman book Red Sun, where Superman lands instead of in the West, he lands behind the Iron Curtain in Russia.
Ah, with ya.
The boy who fell to Earth. I was being a bit vague, though. So,
I thought when you, like, Russian, I thought communism, red. I thought that's what
that works too. And she did play, as you mentioned, Dolph Lundgren's wife in Rocky IV.
Yes, Bridget Nielsen.
Yes, correct.
I think she was dating Flavor Flav from whatever hip hop band for a while.
Well done to Flavor Flav, I guess. So, yeah, congratulations again. And that's the last giveaway we'll do for the end of this year. And we're going to try and do a lot more next year. So,
not a lot more. Hey, easy there, big fella.
Well, you gave away quite a few, you know, good number ones, and a trade paperback of Ryan Woods and Becky Cloonan's demo, from what I remember.
Yes, correct. Well, I was going to save that if we ever get round to our Brian Wood episode. But I thought, I've had this for a while. I've already got a copy. And who knows when we're going to do that episode. So I thought
deserves it. Let's keep this moving. To counter Mark Millar's comments of last week criticising or being wary, I guess, of digital comics, Brian Woods has responded to the really negative response from retailers regarding Dark Horse's announcement that they're going to do same-day digital at a reduced price compared to the print comics.
Yeah, Dark Horse have got some controversy, obviously. They've changed their tune since that press release went out a couple of days ago and issued another press release, basically, from Mike Richardson, who's the founder publisher of Dark Horse, basically just saying we're going to, I can't remember the exact words, but basically saying, yeah, it'll be the same price and then it'll drop. So it's not going to be cheaper. It's not going to be in direct competition with actual retail stores.
Right.
So that's a bit of a sigh of relief from
brick and mortar. Well, the retailers were quite,
as you can imagine. Yeah, I would be.
Yeah, I mean, Brian Wood's comments on it were interesting, but I noticed quite an entertaining comment on that comics. This is where I read the piece on Comics Alliance, I should mention. Yep. Comment there was from Michael P saying, "I'm getting really tired of retailers bitching about the prospect of having to compete with other methods of distribution. Grow up, you spoiled children. Every other industry in the world operates like this." That was kind of interesting for me. Comics retailers are used to having things their way.
Yeah, but the other obvious comparison, obviously, is music, but there's so many music stores everywhere.
There's lots of different ways to buy music now as well. I think an outsider would react the same way to comic stores bitching as they would about Trax. Remember Trax, that CD store that used to be around Australia?
No.
See, exactly. about a particular CD store whining that now people are buying their tapes on online order or whatever. It's just, yeah, you can't expect to have a monopoly for the end of time, I guess.
Mm. No, but I think that there are so few comic shops and getting lesser that they don't really need to be added grief of having such competition.
Oh, this is a whole other argument for you and I, because I think more distribution channels would help not the companies more than it would the comic stores, for sure. They're going to have to take a bit of a hit.
I think Marvel, I think it was Marvel or maybe it was DC, I can't remember, released this press release saying this week that I think in the first one of their issues they're going to put a $5 certificate for a local print copy. So if you buy Avengers Spider-Man number 4 or whatever, you get a $5 gift certificate, a gift card to buy the print equivalent at your local retail store. Mm. So I guess that's driving people into the stores, which is the big thing. But obviously, with comic shops, you go in there for the banter and the chats and that kind of stuff. It's not
everyone's into that. I mean, I've seen a lot of people say, I just want to order online because I feel stupid going into those stores. And I understand why. Just want to mention Brian Wood's quote from here. "Everyone I know who makes comics is hurting financially. So to what extent does digital as a publishing format represent an additional revenue stream, one on top of print sales through shops? No one knows because we aren't seeing true sales numbers yet. No one's figured out the magic price point is because none of the big players have taken the risk and offered a 99 cents comic in a meaningful way. The price point is being kept artificially high out of deference to our retail partners." And he mentions that the price that people are willing to pay hasn't quite gotten to what they're offering people to pay, which I would absolutely agree with. People value a digital product less than they would a physical product. But yeah, it is out of deference to the retail stores. So be interesting to see how things change by necessity, because at a point the companies are just going to go, look, we can't help you retail stores anymore. We have to cover our own profits here.
Look after the bottom line, man. Yeah.
You hate the bottom line.
Let's stick in the same kind of realm with that digital comics and distribution thereof. I sent you a link earlier this morning. I don't know if you had a chance to read it, Milan, about Jim Zubkovich. He's a writer who's writing the Skullkicker series for Image that launched to quite some acclaim earlier in this year. I wasn't a huge fan of the first issue because it was in that kind of weird Image hype where everything they were releasing turned to gold, and I was expecting a bit more. But as I've read subsequent issues, it's actually a pretty good series. It's basically just a dwarf and a big brute going around in a fantasy world, getting into adventures, kind of a medieval lethal weapon, if you will. But it's actually a fairly enjoyable series. The second trade has just been released a couple of weeks ago. So, if you're into, if you're a newbie, it's actually something good that would make you a good stocking stuffer. Nevertheless, it's interesting, Jim Zubkovich, the writer, actually shared an email that he got from a Russian fan called Roman. Basically, the nuts and bolts of it were saying, look, you have a lot of fans here in Russia, but Skullkickers doesn't actually get translated to Russia in print. Mm-hmm. So what I've been doing is scanning it, blacking out all the captions and speech bubbles, putting in the Russian text, mm-hmm. and then kind of putting it online for free. Can you send me the blank blank pages with no captions so it makes it easier for me? So there's been, quite a, as you can imagine, fairly lively debate, and Jim Zubkovich basically just came back today just to saying, I have no idea how to properly respond to this. It's interesting that he actually owns the property, mm-hmm. even though it's published by Image, so he knows that there's no plans for a Russian edition in the future, but then there's been a lively Twitter debate. So a lot of comic creators are in the Twitter sphere, mm-hmm. Going back and forth about, some people saying, yes, you should do it, some people saying, no, you shouldn't, because if you promote this, then it's just going to encourage more, kind of illegal activity.
Yeah.
It's a touchy area, I think.
Scanlations are pretty common these days. It's interesting to see a case where a scanlator is either so naive to what they're doing that they think that they have a right just to contact the creator and just ask for this thing. I've noticed a lot of scanlators are very entitled, like they get very grumpy if someone else releases a rival translation. I'm like, neither of you own the book, guys. Get over it. Like, you're both doing a translation service for free, I suppose. So I guess the question is whether this diminishes, if he were to send them the art, whether this would somehow diminish his exclusive rights on the comic. And in a way, you could argue that in a legal sense. So that's why he's probably been wary.
He has been talking to his lawyer, not about suing the scanners, but
because he mentions in his comment on his blog or something that he himself, when he was young, he first read, you know, certain manga that was only available in scanlations. The thing is, it's not conflicting with any product that's being sold, and international copyright doesn't exist. There's no such thing. So unless if there is a Russian product that he's promoting, what is he? He's not exactly stealing any profits from himself. Do you get what I mean?
Yeah, that is true. But I guess it's kind of setting a precedent as well, and perhaps that's what he's afraid of. I look forward to seeing how this will be resolved. And obviously, I mean, Image is still the publishers of it, so if they do decide to publish a Russian edition in the future, how does that affect it? And I mean, yeah, I think...
I'll sort of mention an example just to address exactly what you brought up. A lot of scanlation sites which handle manga, as we mentioned, talked about before on the show, it's a legal grey area. And once the book is eventually released in English, say Gantz, for example, most scanlation sites have been asked to and have taken it down. So they've just said it's now available to buy in English. Please buy it because we want to support it. And we will no longer be doing scanlations of this particular title because it's being done. And I think that's an interesting way to go, because we are hearing about books that we would have never heard about, and we're almost creating a market for titles through scanlations. There is a benefit aspect to it for the creators, if not the publishers.
Yeah, it gets the property out there in a way other people wouldn't even be familiar with it. So.
Yeah, exactly. In a book like Gantz, which is quite full of offensive material and so forth, I guess if there wasn't scanlations and interest through that, it might never have seen a translation into English book form. And there's so many French books and, you know, European comics that have never been translated into English. Those are a shame, and I feel it's a shame that if they miss out maybe on a book like Skullkickers or it's like in Russia, just because they can't read the language.
We should also point out to Jim Zubkovich that has a pretty good webcomic called Makeshift Miracle. And a couple of weeks ago, he released to the press, well, to everybody, a free torrent download of the first volume, which is like the first 20 pages or whatever of Makeshift Miracle. I reviewed it on my blog comic, Jesus. But, yeah, it's a pretty good webcomic. So he's obviously familiar with the power of digital downloads as a way to reach an audience, but that's a webcomic that's free. So,
well, he's been quite good about, I know in that particular one, he sort of said, re-torrent it, re-upload it. It's not one of those things where only watch the trailer at yahoo.com, you know, those kind of, it's online, but it's not. Yeah, it's he's like, repost it. If you want to translate it, go for it. I think that implication's quite strong with that, a book like that. Anyway.
True, and it's a good webcomic, beautifully illustrated, and it's actually coming to print from Udon Studios, who publishes some of his Street Fighter comics.
Okay, let's move on.
What's that?
Let's move on to another news item.
Okay, I've got one. Brian Michael Bendis is leaving the Avengers franchise after 8 years. So he's kind of Marvel's golden boy and has been for quite a while. So he's written I think every issue of Ultimate Spider-Man before Peter Parker died to be replaced by Miles Morales. But he's basically just announced this week that, he's going to leave it sometime next year. And his quote is, "I'm going to wrap up Avengers and New Avengers. At the same time, the first storyline of Avengers Assemble will be done. It's a good time to move on to other things. Before I go, though, I'm ending things big. I'm in countdown mode. You know when you're watching a show like Breaking Bad and every episode feels like the second to last episode? That's where I'm at." And he's basically just saying that he's written the Avengers kind of franchise longer than anyone in the history of the series. It's about 200 issues all up. So he's really given life and kind of almost made it kind of X-Men level of awesomeness, really. New Avengers in particular is one of the very few Marvel series that I read regularly, and Secret Avengers on occasion as well. So, yeah, I always thought he was quite a beloved writer, but some people are quite happy to see him go because I guess he's kind of had, they're my babies, so they're interesting to see some fresh writers to get a new take on it. I know Warren Ellis's work on the last few issues of Secret Avengers have been pretty a lot more trippy and less superheroic and kind of pretty awesome. So
how many years did you say? 8 years? How many years?
8 years has been writing Avengers. Nice. Yeah.
Didn't even come close to Chris Claremont's run on X-Men. What was that, 14 years or something?
Yes, something like that. Yeah, David as well on Hulk.
Whew.
But I think he was writing multiple titles, so Avengers as well as New Avengers.
Sure.
There's so many different Avengers titles. It's kind of crazy. Let's talk about Chewbacca.
Okay.
It's pretty funny.
Okay. Now, there's a show called Glee, which is basically they combined the worst of, like, American Idol and High School Musical. That's how... If you like the show, I have no apologies. I'm sorry. I can't fathom it.
Doesn't your girlfriend love it?
Yeah. no, she likes the Glee project, which was like a search for the next Pussycat Dolls, but with Glee.
Right.
Yes. What's the deal? Chewbacca is guest starring. A fictional character is guest starring in the show Glee.
This episode, which is, and you can see the, I don't know who the actor is, but he's the one who plays the homosexual person in Glee. He's hugging Chewbacca till he doesn't look too comfortable, but, you know, I guess he's out of...
You're just reading your own discriminations into other people.
Out of the sheet or whatever he lives. It's interesting. They had to get George Lucas's approval, I guess, George's kids or whatever, love Glee, so he gave him the thumbs up and... Mm-hmm. Apparently, I didn't know this, but Peter May, who's the only actor who's authorized to play Chewie, and he's done them in all.
Did they mention Peter? Because I read, I don't know if I read the same
they
exact.
They did mention his name, but he said, one of the guys from Glee, Matthew Morrison, I think plays a teacher, says there is only one guy who can officially be Chewbacca, and he lives in Northern California, and they flew him in.
See, I wonder if that's like another stuntman, and Peter Mayhew just gets... shafted. He's old now, so he's probably like, I don't want to fly out to the set of some show. Send my official Chewbacca stunt standard.
So apparently it's like a Christmas special within the episode, so it's like a show within a show.
Yeah.
And you might recall the Star Wars
Holiday Special,
which has never been released, which I think was the first appearance of Boba Fett, wasn't it? The first animated.
That's true. The first, and yeah, you can see all your favorite characters. Princess Leia sings a song. Yeah,
Princess Leia singing Harrison Ford just hating being there. If you've never seen it, it's notorious. You can catch clips of it on YouTube that George Lucas hates it. This was done, I think, in the late 70s after the first film. It was one of those TV shows.
Mm. We'll move on quickly through the other news items. Alan Moore responded to Frank Miller's crotchety old comments about the Occupy Wall Street movement. Yes. And he wrote quite a nice reasoned response, but I'll just sort of point out one interesting thing in it. And you should read the whole comment because he seems quite insightful, I guess, about it. In typical Alan Moore fashion, he's quite relaxed. He's more relaxed, actually, than he's ever been. Have you noticed that?
Yeah, maybe it's because he doesn't use the internet.
Yeah, possibly. He just, like, for once, Alan Moore doesn't come off being angry to be doing an interview. But he commented that he hasn't been interested in anything Frank Miller's done for the last 20 years and that it seems very misogynistic and homophobic and so forth, which is interesting because we commented on certain factors in Alan Moore's work, which rape as a plot device being the main one. I wonder if he sees it in his own work as well. He's definitely not to the level of Frank Miller, though. That man be crazy. But you should read the comments there. I won't comment further on. He should be Sir Alan Moore, by the way. It's kind of shocking that he's not. But you should read all of his comments there up on Comics Alliance and Comics Beat and everywhere. Let's get into our topic.
Okay. Refreshing. So, Maladin.
So, Chris.
I had the idea that we could call this because I know you don't want to call a pile of shame because you're quite a sensitive soul and you didn't want to inflict.
Well, I just didn't want to admit that we were ripping off Good Game, but
that's fine. Well, I called it Unread Stack.
Unread Stack.
So basically, I don't know, I think I might have suggested to toss this topic last week after our show as I glanced at my bookcase and I've got this IKEA bookcase, and when me and my one of my best mates went to IKEA, we bought two bookcases, a biggie and a lily, and they wouldn't fit in the car, so we had to strap them to the bonnet, and not to the bonnet, to the roof. I can't see it. You're fine.
It's a hilarious comedy starring Owen Wilson. Yeah.
And it kind of, so it was quite humorous. So, now, yeah, that's almost full, so now I've got to go to the little one. But, yeah, it's funny. You kind of just ignore it. It's like, I was going to say a pile of dirty socks in the corner, but I don't have that. But for whatever reason over the years, and you and I have been reading comics for, probably about 40 years between us, or maybe 30 years.
I've been it sounds comics. So impressive when we say it that way.
It does. Yeah. I've picked up a lot of stuff over the years, and I think most of my stuff that I have unread is trade paperbacks and OGMs. Particularly when I went to Comic-Con for the first time in 2008, and I went again in 2009.
Yeah.
And you might know, but have you been to America? You haven't been to America,
no,
have you?
No.
But they have like a 40-kilo bag limit, if memory serves me correctly, which is about double Australia. So when you leave America, I don't know why. So I had like two massive suitcases, 20 kilos each, pushing the weight limit there. And everything was so cheap, That's like literally half price. Because I was a member of the press, I was getting all freebies given to me as well, which is nice. So I just came back with like heaps of stuff. And this is 2008, and I still haven't read a lot of it. And then I did the same thing again in 2009. So that's where most of my pile of shame comes from. And, I'm slowly chipping away. But the interesting thing is that habit has kind of stayed with me. So I have continued to purchase
items.
But I think it's easier, for me, I obviously go to the comic shop every week, and floppies, you can read them while you're on the train or on the bus or while you're waiting, but with trades, you kind of need time to sit down and read them. So I don't really have a stack of unread floppy monthly issues, but I certainly do have a bookcase full of unread trades.
See, I kind of thought it might be maybe the other way around, because I know a few people who say we'll continue to buy a series and not read it every week. I guess the intent being I will, once I've bought 20 issues, I will sit down and read them all, and then I can imagine it would be very easy to never actually sit down and read them all. You just keep buying them every week, because it is a bit of a impulse purchase in a way.
Well, yeah, and I, due to my impending redundancy, which I'm, it's just the first time I've mentioned that on the show, I don't know.
Every week.
I'm very happy about it anyway. So I have kind of cut down on my monthly spending, and I've done a fair bit of trade waiting. I've done a lot of trade waiting, as in not buying particular issues that I'm unsure of.
Mm-hmm.
And rather than saying, okay, I'm going to buy every issue of this four-issue miniseries, I'll just wait until the whole series is finished and then buy it as a slightly cheaper trade paperback.
Sure.
So I've been doing that a lot more often this year.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know about you, but I tend to get a bit nuts, especially when I'm online on Amazon or whatever.
You see the prices and you get that, like, ooh, I've always wanted to read this, I will buy this.
You're interested in this? Buy this for an extra $5. And I'm like, I'm a sucker, I'm there. But, I stopped that insanity because I saw my credit card bill. So I don't really do much online shopping at all these days. But now I have the time, due to my pending redundancy, to read all these trades. So that's a good thing, I guess.
Maybe. I mean, I sort of feel the collector culture or I guess the habit of buying comics feeds this behavior of having stacks of unread things. And, I mean, it's not, I guess, a criticism, but it's very easy to get in the habit of saying in your... that's why kind of I stopped going to the comic store, because I realized I was buying more than I would have if I thought about it and stopped. And I can imagine going every week, it becomes very easy just to impulse buy things, especially when they're priced low. And floppy comics, of course, themselves, they really do encourage just a single read. They're not in a good format for putting on a shelf or for easily rereading. And a lot of guys will just read it once and bag it and board it and box it and never look at it again.
In which case, that's true, and I have done that to a certain degree. Mm. There was a time when I kind of kept at my parents' house, well, they still are, but they were organized quite well, and then you know, had nieces and nephews. And
well, which makes me think, why would you ever need to, if you are that kind of person, maybe you're listening now, like what is it that's, or why would you need to own it then? If it's just the reading, why not, say, switch to digital or go to the library? I mean, I've suggested to quite a few people who are starting out reading comics, hey, just go to the library and borrow out, like, all their graphic novels and read them. It won't cost you anything and you'll work out what you like. But people don't want to do that. And I guess it's the impulse to want to own something that...
Yeah, my parents have this argument all the time because my mum's quite a voracious reader and she buys books, but dad is like, oh, just go to the library. But, I mean, and I guess the principle is the same, but they don't have everything. And there is something a bit more, like you said before, in our new segment, owning something, putting it on a shelf.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, if you invite a girl over and you show her your CD collection and it's all, you know.
Mm. Well, yeah, there are like two reasons for
a wallet. It's not
that for sure. Exciting. I mean, there's two reasons for owning a book. One is you can read it yourself, and if it's good, you can lend it out to someone, you know. But say in the case of where if you don't know you're going to like a book, maybe it's wise to not buy it straight away or just buy it digital so it doesn't take up shelf space. But see, I was listening to a rival podcast. I don't want to say rival podcast. I was listening
mention their name.
I was listening to the Non-Canonical guys.
Oh, yes. Aussie podcaster. Yep,
out of Melbourne, I believe. And they were talking about, I guess, the buying and never looking at them again. And one of them mentioned sort of compulsive hoarding. And they concluded that it's not hoarding because they love what they own. And I don't agree with that definition, but I won't get into reasons why, because it's not fair to argue with them when they can't defend themselves. But there is like a impulse to hoard almost with comics, especially because on the floppies, especially because they are so cheap each, and it could be very easy to end up with a huge pile of comics that doesn't quite get read. And I've thought, oh, I don't have that many, and this being myself and looking through my collection, I'm like, okay. Yeah, I do. But they're mostly floppies compared to you.
I guess in the last few weeks you've been kind of culling and looking at what you own. And
yeah.
Have you been selling stuff on eBay?
You know, eBay has been a bit disappointing, I've got to say. Only one person has paid for their books. But the other person hasn't I'm not sending it out until I get their money. So, it's just a Mexican standoff at the moment.
Getting ready for your interstate move. Mm. Yes, and I think, I guess the collector's mentality is sort of there, because obviously when things are collected in trades, you want to see volume 1, 2, 3, 4 standing next to each other. I'd imagine you've got quite a concise collection of stuff, probably more so than I do. Like, you've got entire trade runs of Sandman and Preacher and D&Z and Fables and whatever, whereas I tend to kind of have one of this and one of that and one of that.
See, and you mentioned that most of your what do you call it? Your stack of...
Unread stack.
Yours was mostly trades, whereas looking through mine, they're all definitely mostly floppies. And I wonder
I mean, I think we talked about, was it in the Free Comic Book Day episode, or perhaps the Read Comics in Public Day, what to do with comics that you don't want any longer? And I mean, so if you do have floppies and you've read them, or you know you're never going to read them, I used to give a lot to hospitals, like kids. Hospitals, we have to be quite careful of what you send them, but they're always happy to stay. Or even just leaving stuff in hospital waiting rooms, giving it to friends, taking, you know.
So you're saying you used to have more, but...
I just give them away, or even just, you know, give them to, you know, op shops or something like that. And you never know what, you know, might be somebody's first comic.
That's an interesting point of view. I see. I was going to suggest that maybe it's because I don't enjoy reading floppy comics very much. The format doesn't feel nice in my hands. Yeah. Whereas maybe you don't like the book format less, but that's gone out the window because of what you just said. So forget it.
Whatever. Well, I tend to do my. I used to impulse buy a lot, especially when I first got my. This current job, which is now that I'm being made redundant from it. Oh, have I mentioned that already? I've been this job after being a student and whatnot, and I was like, oh, yes, you know, you get paid monthly. So I was going nuts and just buying things left, right, center. So I've kind of, a lot of it I've got from then as well. But in the last, you know, couple of years, I've been doing a lot more research and very rarely impulse buy these days. So I'll look in previews and I send my requests through to the comic shops and say, can you please order this for me? So when I go, stuff is waiting for me in a box, I don't really even look at the shelves and see what's on there anymore. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I do, but very rarely will actually pick something up. So I tend to do my research a lot more now and say, is this worth $30 or $40? Is it really?
Well,
let's talk about some of the stuff that is in our stacks.
That's what I was going to suggest. What's sort of glaring at you right now?
The first obvious one for me is a book called Meltdown. About 5 years ago, I started to write for a site which you also joined me on called Infuse, which is a pop culture site. And the guy that's running it, who's now a novelist, Robin Parrish, he actually suggested this book to me. So I picked it up, and it's been in my stack of shame for literally 5 years. I read it finally yesterday.
Right.
And it was good. I actually read this week two books that have been on my pile of shame for a while, but I kind of don't want to talk about them because they're kind of hard to not spoil, I feel them.
I'm glad because I know which one of these books is. So.
Meltdown is basically, it's kind of similar to the other one, which is A God Somewhere. Meltdown is from Image Comics, written by David B. Schwartz, with art by Sean Wang. Got a wonderful Chris Bacallo cover. And I don't know if these guys have done much since comics-wise, but it's a pretty good comic, and I was kind of surprised by the kind of... It's basically about a guy called The Flare, who's a superhero that's dying, so he's kind of... It's flashbacks, and the flashbacks are done in more cartoony style, and then, you know, he's kind of... He realises that it's almost the premise of All-Star Superman, I guess, a superhero who realises he's dying, looks back in his life and whatnot. I was quite impressed with this, and I should have read it 5 years ago. But, very good. If you pick it up and you want something a bit more like an original superhero that's quite dark, then pick up Meltdown. And the other one, which is also a dark but not really a superhero tale, but a normal guy with superpowers, is called A God Somewhere. And this, have you read this? Or
no, I don't think so. You haven't told me enough about it.
It's by Wildstorm, written by John R. Cootey, with art by Peter Snedgeberg and Bjarne Hansen. Basically a guy gets superpowers. He's a Christian, so I was reading, he sees his powers as a gift from God. That's pretty interesting. Kept reading, and it went to some pretty dark places. And again, I don't really want to say anything, but I was pretty impressed by both of these comics. Because, you kind of see a lot of superhero deconstructionist tales these days.
Mm.
Both of these were very widely praised when they first came out. A God Sent Where came out last year. And, it's pretty interesting. I think if you like the Boom Studio series Irredeemable, which is about written by Mark Waid, about the Platonian who's kind of what if Superman turned evil.
Mm-hmm.
I think you'll like both Meltdown and particularly A God Somewhere. I think we might have to talk about A God Somewhere perhaps on another show because it does deserve a bit
of an analysis. Let's pencil it in then. Yeah, I'm happy to join in on a heated analysis or something. That sounds right up my alley.
I made a quick list of just a cursory glance at my
before the show. I was going to mention ones I did read recently from same sort of thing. Things that I was like, you know, I'm just going to read this today, and then just enjoyed them. The first one was I've talked about Tintin and the Alpha Art, which was
I actually looked at that today.
Oh, there you go. I
went in there and I was expecting. Because I knew it was the last, I went to Elizabeth secondhand bookshop just up the road, and obviously because the movie's coming out soon, they got Tintin stuff everywhere. So I was flicking through Alpha Art, and I was like, "Oh, this isn't a finished book. What is this?"
An unfinished book, yeah. It was the last one he was working on. Hergé was the last Tintin book he was working on before he passed away, and he handled most of the plotting. He'd drafted out most of the sequences, at least in sketch form. So there is a half-completed version and a script. And for the longest time, a few people tried their hand at redrawing it or trying to finish it. And that's actually one of the versions I read around. And this is the version by Yves Rodier. And most people agreed that's probably the best one. I'm glad I read it. I mean, it's a payoff to quite a few little storylines that had popped up before, especially the Rastapopoulos character, the the villain of quite a few of the books, he finally gets his comeuppance in, like, this book that never got published. It was like, oh, finally some closure to this. And also the first ever romantic interest for Tintin. Oh. And it's she's not in the book too much, but it was like, this is a surprise. I did not expect that coming. But the book's about the art world, and there's this art forgery is kind of the main thrust of the plot. And there's millions of dollars being thrown around in forgery paintings, no one's afraid to rub out a nosy journalist / reporter like Tintin. But yeah, that's one I was kind of the reasons I was thinking, like, why don't we read these earlier? And part of it is, once sometimes it's got to do with the size of them, you just look at that and go, oh, that's going to take me hours, so I'll just read something shorter, and you never get around to it. But the other thing is, at a certain point, once you've owned it for more than, say, 6 months, I personally sometimes have this little fear that I might not like it, and I'd sometimes just rather not know, because even myself, my tastes have changed considerably in the last year, just in films and television and comics. And there's certain books you're just like, look, I suspect the me that bought this 2 years ago might not have the same taste as me today. I mean, do you ever have that experience?
No, obviously. You're a lot more flighty and erratic than I am. I'm much more of
a... I'm younger than you, though, so maybe you went through this when you were my age.
Oh, who knows? That was a long time ago.
You're not that old.
So did Hergé know that he was dying, or did he kind of want to wrap things up, or...?
I can't remember. He had some disease. There's a documentary about him, and I'll just have to rewatch it, because I honestly cannot recall. Yeah. But it's interesting to look at a book like that, which I just put off, and that's not one that came out recently. So it's when if something hasn't just come out, it makes it a lot easier to put it aside. The other one I read was I've talked about Harlan Ellison on the show before.
Yep.
He did an adaptation with Richard Corbin, artist known through heavy metal and 2000 AD, and of his A Boy and His Dog story, and also kind of a prequel and a sequel to it within the same book. And I grabbed it in like a huge fit of enthusiasm, and then for whatever reason didn't read it for like 2-3 years. So it was nice to read that, because it was, I think maybe I put it aside because I'd just seen the film. Films ruin my appreciation of comics. But yeah, those are just kind of two examples of things we read, but my unread pile is still pretty big. Tell us some of yours.
Yeah, well, at least we can pat ourselves on our back and say that those two are ticked off. Well, some of the other that I own but haven't read, Jack Kirby's OMAC collection, One Man Army Corps, Dave Stevens' The Rocketeer collection, The Starman Omnibus, written by James Robertson, which is one of those, and this I bought because it was one of those widely praised series in the 90s. People kept going on and on about it, and his current writing is nowhere near as good. So I picked up the Omnibus edition, which is, what, 2 or 3 trades in one. The first couple of volumes of Elephant Men from Image Comics, which I picked up at Comic-Con. Madame Mirage, Paul Dini, another one that's widely praised. Superman, Emperor, Joker.
Oh, my.
Yeah.
this thing.
Are you familiar with the Emperor Joker?
Yeah, I am, yeah. Is it where he gets Mr. Mitsubishi's powers?
Yeah, basically Joker becomes a god, so it's basically he shapes the universe in his eyes and image, I guess. So another one is Frey, which is one of the first comic that Josh Whedon wrote about a future Buffy. And I remember when I was at uni, people were really into Buffy and telling me how good it was. And people that wouldn't read comics were reading Frey because it was written by Josh Whedon. It was kind of tied into the Buffy mythology. So that's been on my shelf for years. More recently, Seeds from Comics, English publisher Comics.
Co-publishers we've interviewed on the show.
That is correct. About Blue Spear, I believe, one of the spin-offs from 45, superhero anthology, wonderful book. So, yeah, that's about a written by an artist whose dad has cancer, and it's kind of one of those dramatic tales, again, widely praised. Underground, which is like a underground kind of action adventure, the Visionaries, Volume 1, by Walt Simonson, the Hulk Visionaries, Peter David. I've got the first four volumes of that. I've read a lot of single issues in the 90s. Really got me hooked on Peter David's works. And then I thought, well, he's written Hulk for 14 years, so I thought I'd buy up the trades and go back to where he began. Mm. So that's just a bunch of stuff that I own that I haven't read. But I've also got a bit of a list about stuff I do want to own.
That's almost like a... Everyone's got their wish list, don't they? And then maybe because our piles are so big, we haven't got those books yet.
No.
Yeah. I mean, mine, like book stuff I own that I haven't had a look at yet. I've got quite a few volumes of Cerebus after Minds, and I still haven't ever seen the end of that series. And the last I read was where he was being catapulted through space, and he talks to Dave, his creator, and Cerebus demands Dave that he make Jaka fall in love with him. That's his love interest of the series, and Dave shows him all possible futures where they're both miserable because they ended up together. So Cerebus is depressed and asked to be exiled, and it's like this natural halfway point in the series. So I think maybe that's why I stopped, because it's such a dense, kind of densely written, dialogue heavy, kind of idiosyncratic, very entertaining comic series. But man,
are you familiar with the end? Like,
I know he ages and his son hates him, and that's all I really know. I'd like to read more about it. I know as further the series goes in, the less story there is, and the more it is just a chance for Dave Sim to talk to you, the reader. And he's carried that on with his Glamourpuss series, where he kind of just talks directly to you. There's very little conceit of the story anymore.
Yes.
So maybe that's why I was put off. I'd love to go back and reread the entire series and keep reading, but those books are huge.
They are.
another one, there's a whole bunch of like just short comic series that I picked up and never read, like Interface. Where there was 8 issues of that in like, say, 1989 through Epic Comics, I'm pretty sure. And that's about a series of psychic, they're kind of like X-Men, but they're all psychics, I guess, and like painted artwork originally by David Lloyd. I think that's why I picked it up. I've got
V for Vendetta.
Exactly, yeah. I've got almost the first half, I think, of Automatic Kafka, the Ashley Wood series, and I don't know why I didn't read that. I've got a big pile of Spirou comics by Frank Kahn, and he's a writer who would go on. He would introduce. He didn't come up with the character, but he worked on it, I think, the longest. And they're rare to find in English, and I'm lucky to have readable copies in Croatia, but I still haven't gotten around to reading them. So I don't know what's wrong with me there. And I'll just mention it's about a pair of adventuring journalists, one of whom still wears the uniform he wore in his bellhop days for no reason. And I sort of think maybe it's the same reason Captain Haddock still dresses like a sailor, even though he hasn't been a sailor for 40 volumes. I've got like all the first 4 volumes of Do Androids Dream of Electric Sheep, the adaptation from Boom Studios of Philip K. Dick's novel. And I haven't read that because it's literally a word-for-word adaptation of the novel down to if someone says something in a speech bubble, it'll say he said afterwards. They did not change a single thing or excise a single thing. And that's probably what's put me off, because I'm like, this series is going to go forever. I have a fair few volumes of the fairly highly sought after Blueberry by Mobius before he kind of rose to fame, I guess, with Metal Highland. But I'm very happy to own them, and I've never got around to reading them. It's a Western series, by the way. Maybe that's why. I've got an entire run of Peter Milligan's Shade the Changing Man from Vertigo, and I've maybe read 12 issues of that. And that's that debuted around the same time as Sandman, very similar comic to that. It's kind of psychological, supernatural horror in the tradition of Alan Moore's Swamp Thing. I've got like an entire run of Ken Parker, which is an Italian comic, and that's another Western, but it's a kind of an anti-hero, anti-Western, I guess. I've got whole runs of Dragon Ball, Basilisk, Battle Angel Alita, they're all manga.
Yep.
Yeah, it's... and it's when they're whole volumes or whole runs of things, that's when I'm like, I can't do this. It's too much.
It's a bit more intimidating and imposing.
Oh, for sure. It feels like I need just put aside several days. And it's not like I don't have several days. It's not like I work.
Will you take some of these with you on your trip, leave the ones you want to read at your parents' place?
That's a clever idea. Yeah, I think I might do that. They'll be the first to come
over. If you want to read them, then maybe you know that we're on some point, then, yeah, definitely keep them somewhere.
They're the first to come over with me. Yeah, but, yeah, we both got our piles of comics that we just, for shameful reasons. I mean, besides the reason of time, do you think there's any other reason why you would pick a book that's just come out over one that you've had for ages to read?
I mean, I have found that this show has been a very good reason to force me to go back and read a lot of these trades that I wouldn't, like our Love episode or our Crime episode or our 50s sci-fi, like stuff I wouldn't normally read just by the mood of it, you know. So this show, our little humble podcast, has certainly forced me to look at my bookshelf a lot more. And then every time I go to my parents' place, I'll have a list of stuff. Oh, yeah, I've got that. That'll be good for next week's show. So I think that has certainly helped me a lot. But I think with comics, I was actually thinking about this morning, yes, you have to be in a pretty specific mood to sit down and read them. It's not like, you know, I mean, I own DVDs that I haven't watched either, you know. I've got the complete section of Firefly. Mm-hmm. I still haven't watched the original trilogy Star Wars films on Blu-ray. I've got The Fool.
Yeah, you've seen those a million times. That's probably why you haven't done it.
Yeah, I want to see CGI Yoda in episode one. But,
do you?
Maybe I'll see if I do when I watch it, if I watch it. But I think with films, it's almost you can throw it on as background, and that's what I do. Often I'll watch a film when I'm doing something else, and then if it's really engrossing, then I'll stop surfing the net or blogging to watch the film. But with comics, it requires your full attention, my lad. And so I'm actually holding Habibi, which is another big one I didn't mention, Craig Thompson. Creative Blankets, which is one of the best comics I've ever read. Wow. Goodbye Chunky Rice is one of his first books. I think his first book, actually another one I haven't read. And Habibi, which is, it's like 800 pages or something ridiculous. So,
well, it only came out like, what, 2 months
ago? A couple of months ago, yeah. So
so you're excused. That's fine.
It's a gorgeous looking book, but yeah, it is a tome.
Yeah, I've got to squeeze, like rush through it over the next 2 weeks. So, I've just finished one 600-page tome by Anders Nilsson, Big Questions, and that was great.
Oh, okay, yes, I've heard good things about that.
Yeah,
I did one. I also wrote a brief list of stuff that I do want to own but don't.
Yeah, go for it.
I do want to read Sandman. I think I read the first volume that you lent me a while ago. I would love to own Marv Wolfman and George Perez's Teen Titans, which basically just outsold X-Men back in the early 80s. Stan Lee and Jack Kirby wrote the record breaking at the time, 102 issues of Fantastic Four. Wouldn't mind reading some of those. Frank Miller's Daredevil, I've never read any of. Frank Miller and Chris.
That's one of the first comics I read, by the way.
What's that?
That's one of the first comics I read, Frank Miller's Daredevil. Yeah.
I did read when he came back to Daredevil Born Again, was it?
Okay.
With John Romita Jr. That was pretty good. I did read that, but I haven't read his initial series of it. And I would like to. I saw Crimson Tide on TV the other day, just a bit, and they were arguing about who did Silver Surfer better, Jack Kirby or Mobius. And I think Mobius has only ever done perhaps one.
Yeah, I've got that one. It was a 4-issue mini or a 2-issue mini, and yeah, Stan Lee scripted it, and Mobius kind of in the Marvel style, so Mobius had a lot of freedom on it. I can lend that to you. There you go. Okay. You can cross that one off your list.
Thanks, buddy. So, I've actually got three others that I've only picked up recently. Nordegaard, Book One, Across the Ice, which is kind of like written by Sofa Wolf, published by Sofa Wolf, by Tess Garman and Tegan Gabbert. It's kind of like Black Sad, so it's dogs as humans. Got a book one called Zombies That Ate the World. This is by Humanoids, Jerry Fisson and Guy Davis. Another one which I need to get to. And finally, Random Voice, which is published by Udon Studios by Jeffrey Chamba Cruz, who does a lot of Street Fighter work. A Aussie artist, I believe, a Melbourneian. Very kind of wild and crazy. So it's usually the idea that strikes me. So those three are all very, very different comics from one another. But if I look in previews and I see, well, that's an awesome idea, I like those creators, I'll get it. But yeah, obviously the monthly issues always come first reading for me, because I can just throw them in my bag and read them on the train or the bus rather.
And you've always been a vocal advocate of reading comics in public. You don't need a special day.
Nah,
exactly. You're talking about all these ones you've always wanted. I have, like, probably an enormous list, and I'm sure that was your shortened list as well.
It was, indeed.
Yeah. Oh, boy. I've always wanted to track down some original Mad comics.
Oh, yes.
From Harvey Kurtzman's first days, and I know they go expensively. And our chum Keith over at Quality Comics recently bagged himself a very early issue, which he spent a bit of money on. I think it was like issue 14 or issue 7 or something. A multiple of 7 it was. So I was quite envious of that.
Yes. But
things like that, it's always older comics I want to track down, which I won't list my whole list. There you go. All right.
That's a pretty complete rundown, I guess. If any of you wonderful listeners, perhaps you can shame our pile of shame and mention what's on your unread stack.
Yeah, no one's. I'm sure people are worse than us, but I hope for your sake you're not. It's depressing.
What are we talking about next week, Maladdin?
Why, sir, next week we're going to accumulate more crap by suggesting kind of a Christmas shopping list, if you will. Yes. Now, how are we going to do this? Is this going to be. We've got to assume that most of the people listening to our show are already into comics. So this has got to be less. Hey, you don't know what you want for Christmas. This is what you can tell people to buy you. And more, maybe some gift ideas for your friends who maybe that's might be curious.
I think that's the tack we'll take here. Comics newbies friendly Christmas gift stocking stuffers. Yeah, Christmas and birthdays, when I have the money, I'm always use it as an excuse to buy someone comics. Because as we always believe, you know, there's a comic out there for everybody, just like there's a band or a book or a movie out there for everybody. We'll be suggesting a few, I guess, broken down by categories. Mm-hmm. And then, the week after that, which will be last week for 2011, will be best of list, and there's been some awesome stuff released in the past 12 months.
Yeah, I'm kind of looking forward to that episode. Yeah, the best of. I reckon next week, there's one book I'm expecting you to bring up as a gift, and I'm ready to rip into you if you do.
Can I guess what it is?
No, you can't. I have to save it for next week.
Okay. Right? Better come up with some witty retorts next week.
Yeah. I've given you fair warning that one of the things that maybe you'll surprise me and you won't mention this thing because you have better taste than that.
I'm not full of surprises, mate, and I'm quite predictable.
Well, in which case, get ready for an evisceration. Anyway.
Thanks for listening, everybody, and hopefully maybe you have some of the comics that we've mentioned in our unread stack, and you can tell us that we should read them right now, drop everything else, or you can tell us, don't buy that, hopeless.
And if you want to buy Chris any of the comics he suggested for Christmas, you're more than welcome.
Oh, that would be very nice. You can email us, Chris with a K, chris@extrasequential.com. Our Facebook page is obviously always up there. Mm-hmm. And thank you always for listening and taking part in our online discussions. Mm. Comic Book Jesus is my blog. Maladdin.
You should hit us up on the Extra Sequential Facebook with comments about this show or any other previous shows, as we're trying to get some conversations going there. Everyone's been quiet over Christmas.
They have, haven't they?
I guess it's that time of year. Maybe people are depressed. Don't kill yourselves, folks. There's plenty more episodes of Extra Sequential to come. You can catch more of my writing at thefindmag.com. There's music writing stuff. And the music for the show is at purgeaudit.com. And I'm working on some stuff over the Christmas break, which I'm excited about. So,
is it in like Christmas themed music?
Oh no, wouldn't that be something?
I was listening to your Michael Bublé's Christmas album the other day.
Why would you do that?
Because I heard it in a shop or something, and I was like, "Oh, that's Bublé. He's got a good voice for Christmas." So I went to the iTunes shop, and you can preview the songs, but there was only a couple of good songs in there, so I didn't buy it. All I want for Christmas,
who's a good voice for Christmas? Tom Waits.
Really?
Yeah, perfect.
I don't picture it.
Merry Christmas. that's not bad. All right, thanks, folks, and catch us next week for your Christmas gift buying guide.
See ya. Catch you on the flip side.
Bye-bye. Yeah.